EQ is not about being happy all the time. EQ is not about being in a sort of warm embrace with others every experience that they have. It's not only about trust falls. It's not only about listening sessions. It's not only about connection. One, two.
Welcome to the Emotional Intelligence Podcast, a podcast where we explore the intersection of emotional intelligence and leadership. And whether you're a seasoned executive or just starting out in your leadership journey, we're going to share practical tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you develop your emotional intelligence and achieve your goals. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take your leadership skills to the next level. I'm Ismail.
And I'm Samir.
Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with David Schechtman, a partner at Evolution and a luminary in the realm of executive coaching. David has 2 decades of experience and has owned his skills in guiding CEOs, high potential leaders, navigating the intricacies of deep change. So his influence extends across various high profile companies such as Slack, Twitter, Electronic Arts, and Coursera, just to name a few, and his academic credentials are equally impressive. David has a master's in organizational development from Pepperdine University and a suite of esteemed certifications, including being a professional certified coach. And beyond his professional accolades and his impact on the corporate world, he's also shared his insights as a presenter at the OD Network Annual Conference and as a TEDx speaker. So, afternoon, David. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So David, why don't we just start a little bit, tell us a little bit about your personal life, your work life, kind of who are you?
Thank you. Yeah, again, it's really wonderful to be here. I'm excited to talk about this topic. Part of the reason I say that is I feel like I've been planning for, I don't know about this conversation, but this general conversation most of my life. I actually grew up in a really interesting household where I had a father who was an entrepreneur, as well as maybe an early coach or certainly a consultant who was doing work in people development at an age where that was really unusual and kind of trendsetting in many ways. And so I grew up in an environment where I had self-awareness, self-information, conscious decision-making, being a part of my lexicon and a part of my experiences when I was very young and up through my formative years and then into high school and beyond. And so in a lot of ways, I feel like I've been, kind of honing the craft here of my work for quite some time. It's no accident I ended up in the same field as my father. In fact, I worked with him for 9 years. He brought me into his company and helped launch me in this career. And you know, forever grateful for those opportunities that he afforded me. And then also equally as grateful that he let me go after 9 years and allowed me to pursue my own path strike out in my own way and continue my own individual journey in this work. So I'm originally from the Chicago area. I know we were talking before recording that lived in some areas very close to where the two of you are right now.
Right.
Moved around a little bit after that. Found myself back in Chicago, met my future bride, and then we married, started a family. And then just as soon as we got settled in this new family unit, decided to relocate to Southern California. So we came out here to where I am right now in the metro LA area. I was out here about a year when I had that like, oh crap moment that a lot of people do when they relocate to a very expensive coastal city and say like, what did I get myself into here? And how in the world am I going to get myself out of it? And at that point, began in earnest looking at new communities, skill sets, capabilities that felt really important for me to develop at that point. And so I landed on graduate school and decided, I'm going to work full time. I have an 18-month-old daughter I'm in a new part of the country. Let's add grad school to the mix. Put that 4,000-pound weight on my back.
That's usually how it goes.
And so I just trudged up the mountain. Was maybe naive at that point, but just, kind of put the chips on myself and said, I'm going to bet on my abilities. So I finished the program, went out on my own for, I think it ended up being about 6 years, enjoyed it and was effective. Felt a bit alone in the wilderness at times. And that's when one of my very close friends from the Pepperdine program, Matt Oren, called me, and he and another original co-founding partner created a firm that got quite a bit of traction in Silicon Valley. That's when I decided that I wanted to join forces with Evolution. We rode, a rocket ship for quite a while there when there was a great deal of available and abundant resources in the tech startup world, the venture-backed startup world, grew with a lot of our clients very rapidly. And then we're able to mature the business more and expand and be very active in a number of different sectors, and then grow the partnership.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like it sounds like for you, things just kind of came together at the right place at the right time. And if you hear anybody's story, it kind of feels the same way, right? Things are just happened at the right time. And when you said you decided to add grad school, I would say Ismail and I also had a lot on our plate, and then we decided, let's start a podcast.
That's right. Just a small thing.
It's like pish posh. Yeah. Something really interesting that I had read in your bio, and before, Samir and I, we do love emotional intelligence as it pertains to the corporate world and just real life use cases. Yeah. But something that interesting that came across in your bio, and it was in relation to a quote, Scott Galloway, right?
Yes.
And the quote reads, "Capitalism is full body contact violence at a corporate level, so that we can create prosperity and progress that rests on a bed of empathy."
Yes.
Can you just give me some context around that? Because I did see an episode with him and Bill Maher.
Yes.
And he talked about that quote. He mentioned that quote. I don't know if that's where it's from.
Yes.
A great episode, but I'm curious.
Yeah. I'm really glad you asked me that question, because I think I have some non-traditional views of EQ in many ways that quote speaks to. If I were to pick out some key words in that quote that I think most people would align or associate with emotional intelligence and EQ, I think that would be empathy, and the maybe the softer, more positive oriented terms related to emotional intelligence. About engagement and warmth and understanding, and all of those are clearly a part of emotional intelligence. There's parts of me that are soft, caring, warm, and empathetic. And I try to make those available to people in my life. But full contact, conflict, challenge, kind of this idea of mixing it up, those are also a part of emotional intelligence and EQ. And they're not better. They're not worse. They're just the same as the positive qualities. And what I really believe is that so many of the messages and many of the people leading conversations have, with the best of intentions, created a distorted view of emotional intelligence that over-indexes and over prioritizes positivity. EQ is not about being happy all the time. EQ is not about being in a sort of warm embrace with others every experience that they have. It's not only about trust falls. It's not only about listening sessions. It's not only about connection and this idea that we're going to positively work our way through every circumstance. That's simply not a reflection of the human condition. That's not a reflection of the totality of society. The reality is that anger, disappointment, frustration, sadness, grief, those are all part of the full spectrum of people's emotions. And so when I look at emotional intelligence and I think how emotional intelligence plays a useful role in people's lives, in leaders' lives, in organizational cultures, I see the entire spectrum. I don't just see one side of it.
So does that, how does that look work in practice? Like first, as you're describing that, the first thing that comes to mind is when two people are in conflict, how they're handling it. I mean, it might be with passion, with raised voices, with some anger, but it's respectful almost. You know, they're not just, you know, flipping people off and swearing at them and maybe that's part of it. But tell me what that looks like in practice.
You know, I think that's a great question. If you're okay, I would like to answer that from an individualistic perspective first.
Sure.
And then I want to expand it into a broader sense or a broader context of an engagement between two people. So let me rewind a little bit to my Pepperdine experience, MSOD. Go Waves! Not many people know the Pepperdine mascot.
I didn't know that that was the mascot. But that's amazing.
What else could it be? It's right on the beach of Malibu, right? Like it's the waves. That's what you see all day. Part of the reason I was attracted to Pepperdine's program in the first place is when I was going through the materials and talking to alumni of the program and faculty, I heard this concept called self as instrument. Sometimes it's called use of self. There are other labels and monikers that people often use, but self as instrument is what stuck with me the most. And the idea of self as instrument is that as a change agent or as a helper in a helping relationship, the individual is the most important instrument, not the frameworks, the models, the assessments, all the other tools that go into that work. It doesn't mean they're irrelevant. I mean, I use personality profiles all the time. I love frameworks and models, and they're, you know, there's kind of a joke, right? Consultants and coaches have all their models and frameworks and all of that. They're wonderful, and they do a great job of framing situations for people. But I'm under no illusion that they do the work or that they add the highest value. I am the instrument with my clients. And there's no way that a tool, even AI, is going to replace the value that I as a human in a relationship can deliver. So if you buy into that belief that I'm the most important instrument, then you also accept the fact that I need to be a clean instrument. So how I show up is not just determined by what book I read 20 years ago in college or whatever. It's determined by what happened to me this morning, how I'm feeling about, you know, the fact that, you know, I had a disappointing encounter with somebody, or I lost a client, or, you know, something tough happened in my family life. So I carry all of that in with me when I do my work. So it's my job. It's not my client's job. It's my job to be in charge of how I handle all of those aspects of my life. So it would be nice if I were just filled with rainbows and butterflies and, you know, great, you know, hopes and aspirations for everyone every moment of the day. I mean, I wish that were the case. I mean, you know, I'm still looking for that pill to take, but it's not true. The truth is, you know, I'm angry at a lot of people and I'm disturbed by the news and you know, just pissed off that something didn't go the way I wanted it to. And somebody in my life let me down yesterday and it, you know, didn't need to turn out that way. So it's my job to work through that entire constellation of emotions. And so if I turn a blind eye to my challenges, to my concerns, to my shadow, it doesn't mean those things go away. Sure. It just means I have very little control or personal agency in how I show up. And it often means that even though I'm not consciously aware of it, those negative emotions, those frustrations, those challenges internally can end up in the driver's seat of my conduct and behavior. And so the place to start for me with this full spectrum of emotional intelligence is with myself. I have to get very clear on who I am, what I like about myself, what I don't like about myself, what I carry around, the baggage, the frustrations, because if I'm not in charge of it, it's in charge of me.
And I think oftentimes we talk about leaders feeling burnt out, and it's because they, in a lot of ways, don't make peace with everything that you just mentioned. It's they take on everybody else's stresses. They're trying to be that empathetic leader. However, they're not recognizing that they themselves are hurting in certain ways. They undermine or give less acknowledgement to their own suffering, and then they pile on other people's suffering, and then they end up burning out. So that's another reason why I think it's super important that people have that introspection and really try to recognize their own challenges and give themselves grace when they can, you know?
So yeah, I want to build on what you just said, Samir. I think the burnout is the least of our worries or the lowest priority challenge. And I don't say that because I'm, you know, I don't care about burnout or I think, you know, like people just need to tough it out. No, I felt burned out a lot of my life. But what I want to suggest is that burnout is only affecting one person. That's the person burning out. Now, you know, their family, it's a second, third order effect. I get that. But directly, it's one person. So I want to explain the larger dangers. And I think this is a very important leadership concept, that this is not just about, you know, a coach talking about, you know, being a good coach, but this is a leadership concept. I'm sure your listeners have, you know, heard of or read the book Leadership and Self-Deception, which, you know, to me is just one of those, like, you know, just incredibly powerful pieces, or works that, I think is, you know, shaped me, and I've shared it with my clients quite a bit. A little dated in some ways, but it's a very powerful book. The preface to that book tells a story about, I believe he's a Hungarian doctor, Ignaz Semmelweis. I think it was of German descent, but was living in, you know, like the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And I think he was a kind of a mid to late 19th century figure. He was a doctor, and he ended up doing a lot of work on hygiene, germ theory, you know, kind of this like antiseptic, you know, procedures that now, you know, just are obvious to all of us in medicine. But he was working in a hospital that had a maternity ward, and he identified just an absolutely horrifying statistic, which was that women who gave birth in hospital were something like two or three times more likely to die than women who just gave birth at home or in the streets or something like that. And it was mysterious, you know, to people. And they couldn't figure out why, and it was confounding. And, you know, why would science be hurting people? I mean, it just really didn't make sense until he realized that, and remember this era, this is like before germ theory was really known. But he realized that the doctors very often, if not most of the time, before they were actually going into the delivery room, they were handling cadavers.
Cadavers. They're doing autopsies, right? In other rooms.
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly right. So they're swimming at that point in bacteria. And without washing their hands, they're probably smoking cigars too while all this is happening, handling dead bodies that are decomposing in front of them. And then they're going in and, you know, in the middle of a, you know, miraculous event with, you know, sanitation requirements at the highest level possible. And they're just, you know, unwittingly infecting all these people and killing these mothers. And I think that's a pretty powerful metaphor for what many people who are really trying to help individuals end up doing. Great coaches, great consultants, great leaders who genuinely have the best interests, at least, you know, on a conscious level of the people, but they're coming in and contaminating other folks with their own baggage. And to me, the point that's so valuable here is sometimes people with the best of intentions, if they're not clear, if they're not clean in a, you know, emotionally hygienic way, they can very unintentionally harm the very people they're looking to help. And so that's why I say burnout is bad. I don't want people to burn out. I don't like to feel burned out. But burnout seems to me to be the least of our challenges when we think about the fact that people who really want to help can not only not be helping, they can be harming folks. And to me, that often comes from a denial of negativity, of negative emotions, of negative concerns, of just, you know, a sense of unprocessed, you know, anger, frustration, or disappointment. So I think it's critical. It's incumbent upon coaches, podcast interviewers, leaders, right? People who are in a service or a helping role to recognize that my first responsibility with emotional intelligence is to see all of myself, not just the parts I want to see, not just the noble parts, the healthy, the positive ones, but to see it all. It doesn't mean that you're going to fix it. Like if I could fix myself, I would have done it a while ago, right? I'm a broken soul like everyone else. But when I see the full picture, I can make conscious decisions. And the more conscious I'm making my decisions, the more likely I'm able to align these behaviors with the outcome I actually want.
So is this a lifestyle that you're talking about, or is this point in time? Meaning, so I got into a car accident, someone yelled at me at the coffee shop, I spilled my coffee, and now I'm going in to see a client, and it's like, okay, take a moment, take stock of what happened, you stop, and you are conscious of what just happened, and you act differently. You act in the best interest of the person that you're with, say, or even to yourself a little bit, right? But does that mean that you know when you're done, you turn that part of you off, and then you're angry again, and you let it out, you work out, or is this just a way of life? It's supposed to be zen the whole time.
Well, okay, no, I mean, even the way you asked that question, I think requires a little bit of drilling down or understanding, because it's not zen. Like sometimes it makes sense to get super angry, I don't want to share specific examples, but you know, it's a company I'm paying money to for a service, and they let me down. They were untruthful. Yeah. I was not calling them and, you know, thanking them for, you know,
I was empathizing with them.
I was irate, and I had every reason to be irate. And I'm not going to stop being irate until it's fixed. But I made a conscious decision to do that based on the fact that it was context appropriate and it was a real thing in the moment. It wasn't me channeling my rage about someone or something else on an unwitting customer service employee. Now, I've done that too. So I'm not saying that I'm above this, right? Like this is... We're humans, right? We're animals. We do things that don't make sense all the time. And I'm no exception. But I would like to say, you know, back to the original question you asked on this topic, Ismail, you know, I don't know if a way of life is the way I would say it. I certainly don't want to, like, no one's got the truth. And I'm not asking anyone to, you know, join a cult or anything. But I think it's a healthy way to live emotionally. And so what I'm trying to do is, you know, live a healthy lifestyle most of the time and understand that I'm a flawed person. Sometimes I'll live in accordance with, you know, who I say I am. And sometimes I'll stray, but that's okay. I can find my way back.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you want to stay updated on all the latest content and behind the scenes action, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and several other places by using the link in the show notes. And if it's not too much trouble, we'd love for you to leave a review and share this episode with some of your friends. Your support means everything to us, and we can't wait to connect with you online. Now, let's get back to the show.
you know, one thing that I like to preach to leaders, or not preach is not the right word, but something I like to discuss with leaders and even myself, is I try to show up as consistently as possible because I'm trying to create safety with my people, right? I want them to know that when they come to me, whether it's good, bad, they are going to get the same Samir, you know, who's going to pragmatically work with them to a solution. But then sometimes you're right, I am very upset and I find myself having to regulate very quickly. In from your perspective, do you think that getting angry in those contexts and showing that emotion is the right thing to do because it's more authentic? Or like, how do you navigate those situations? Because I don't want to be, you know, just showing too much emotional range and then my team doesn't know what Samir they're going to get. And then they're just going to be scared and not come to me.
Yeah. Incredible question. Thank you for asking that, Samir. And I was actually going to bring up the whole concept of authentic leadership as well. So I'm glad you seeded the conversation that way, or the topic. You know, I've never met anyone who says that they don't want an authentic leader or that they don't like authentic leadership. It just seems like almost a universal quality that people admire. Why do you think people say that? Because you can trust authentic leaders. They're trustworthy. So people like, I don't want to rail too hard on this, but I don't trust people who are happy all the time.
They're kind of scary a little bit. When are they going to go off?
Which going to flip?
I mean, I'm not saying they're not fun to be around, but I don't trust them. Right? Like, yeah, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but, but no, I don't trust in a general sense. Like if I'm picking my team to work on a project, or, you know, I'm identifying a, you know, place where I want to put a lot of time and emotional energy into, it's not with people who are happy all the time, because I don't trust people who never show me a dark side, or who never reveal the challenges that they have, or never get messy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't seem like they don't seem human.
Yeah, it's exactly.
It doesn't seem possible that you can be that happy all the time, or whatever emotion it is all the time.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, Samir, back to your question, my experience has been that when I'm authentic, people trust who I am, and then they give me latitude to be a normal human being and even to make mistakes. And so the trap or the quandary that I think a lot of leaders get in is they become accidentally performative, and the performative nature of their leadership is they're always positive. They're always supportive. They're always there. And I mean, that's not possible. That's just not humanly possible. So you want to talk about a recipe for burnout?
Sure. Yeah.
Then try to be a always happy, always positive leader. It just doesn't work that way. It's not realistic. And I think it creates an expectation that people just have no ability to actually follow through on. And then, you know, kind of maybe again, at best, it leads to a burnout and maybe a little bit of just disengagement. At worst, then it can create a flip, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when the person who's been the warm, fuzzy, avuncular personality suddenly screams at you and, you know, takes you down a notch. And, you know, and you feel like you don't know what in the world happened, because it's like a volcanic eruption of all this pressure of frustration and negativity, never finding a release.
And that could be more detrimental to trust than anything else, right? That moment.
Yeah, it feels like a betrayal at that point. Yep, and exactly. And it's hard to come back from betrayal.
I've also seen or heard people say, like literally to me, their definition though of authenticity, or their execution of authenticity, is off, in the sense that they're like, well, you know what? I'm in a bad mood today. I'm going to be authentic. And they're being a jerk to everyone. That to me is different. That's not authentic. That's not the authenticity that we're talking about. Right. But they take it to extremes. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's like the other side of the coin of being always positive, I think, is that you have like a license to be cruel. And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense either. That's a distortion of reality as well. I mean, you know, I suppose some people are always angry or always cruel or something like that, but it's another extreme interpretation of what's meant to be a full spectrum, right? So I don't really measure someone's EQ by like how they show up one day, right? So they could have a bad day or they could just be off. I've had plenty of bad days where it's like the whole day's bad, you know, or the week feels off or something like that. But you know, the idea of self-management, I think, is a critical part of EQ. But it's what happens, I think, is a lack of introspection leads to an extreme outcome, whether that extreme outcome is hyper positive or hyper negative. And then it becomes like this polarization within people. And then that leads to, you know, what you were saying, which is folks who, you know, whether they say it or not, just say like, I'm done. I can't take this anymore. And, you know, you're going to get the evil me. And this is because, you know, I'm just being true to who I am. It's like, no, that's like, that's an irresponsible way to behave. And that has nothing to do with emotional intelligence. That just is a decision to not care about anyone else's feelings.
Another point, when we were catching up, you had mentioned something called the arc of justice.
You know, when I think about this topic, and it clearly relates to coaching and leadership and a lot of business applications, but I often think of this most with my role as a parent. And so, like, there's nothing more dangerous than finding someone in behavioral science trying to raise a child. Right. So I know that from personal experience. Love my dad, and you know, and feel good about a lot of my childhood experiences. But I often felt like a client, right? So that can be a challenge. Is you get into tinkering with, you know, kind of kids, and things can feel kind of contrived and artificial and all that. So I'm, my wife and I are raising our daughter, and you know, I'm a executive coach, and you know, she was primarily at home, but you know, was working with graphic design, so she's in a very different field, and I'm very happy she's in a very different field, because I'm like anyone else. I can believe my own hype and think I've got everything figured out, and you know, I just sort of know how to wave my hand and everything works. Well, I made a very conscious decision early in my parenthood that I was not going to be a hyper positive, always lovely and warm parent. Now, doesn't mean I'm gonna like be, you know, conditional with my love. My love is unconditional, but I'm a real person, and real people get angry, and real people overreact, and real people hurt sometimes the folks that they love, not intentionally. So I made a decision that I wasn't going to go through twisting myself in knots and some sort of verbal gymnastics every time I was upset and try to mask negative feelings. I was just going to share them. And if after that happened, I felt as though I overreacted or did something I shouldn't, I was going to apologize. So what I tried to do was model a real human, not an artificial synthetic parent bot, but a real human. And sometimes that human was great, and sometimes that human was not great, but that human would always clean up any mess that he made. And to me, that created an arc, going back to that concept. And so for me, the arc was that I'll always make it right. I'm not perfect, but I'll always make it right. So we can fight, we can overreact, we can mistreat each other from time to time, thinking of my relationship with my daughter. All of that will happen, but it will always bend in the direction of intimacy.
That's fantastic. I was earlier in this conversation going to bring up parenting in the sense of self-management. And I think you touched on it very well. I won't harp on it, but one thing that I notice is that my kids are kids. I've got an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, right? They do not, their brains are not even close to formed. So they're going to make mistakes. They're going to do things. And somehow they're going to do things to really at some point bother you. Like they're going to break something expensive. They're going to do something you told them not to. And I'm not going to be all hunky-dory, like, oh, pat you on the head. No problem. Run along. No, there's going to be some consequences. And I might not have a smile on my face, but I will be doing it from a place of love and caring. And there will be a conversation, maybe not at that point, but there will be consequences. And my voice raises, it goes down, it stays calm. There are plenty of times that I've apologized to my kid. I'm glad that I'm able to do that. I don't think everyone can. And it's a lesson that I've learned. And I'm hoping to pass that value, those values on to my children. This applies to the corporate world as well.
Oh, 100%.
I feel like sometimes I'm at work and I'm dealing with my kids. That's what it feels like sometimes. And not to say like they're age-wise or anything, but you know what I mean, right? Some of the things that come out and the tactics that you have to use are just the same at home and vice versa. Things that you learn at work, you're like, well, I'm going to try this at home. And it is very much, this is for me, I think just solidified the notion of, say, authenticity or not being hyper positive all the time.
Because absolutely,
you can still make huge progress with your children. You're going to see the entire timeline, the entire arc. You're going to see it. And if we're doing what we're doing and we're saying it's going to work, which probably will, you should see a fairly well-adjusted human being at the end of it in Ascension, calling it a success.
Absolutely. Just a quick comment on that, Ismail, and I really appreciate you bringing that up. Sometimes it can feel awkward to talk about like an overlay of parenting and employee development or leadership of others. But I completely agree. I mean, people are always saying we need to develop our people. Well, what's the biggest development experience most folks have, right? It's growing up or raising others and helping them grow up. And I, you know, part of what I was sharing earlier about my decision and how I was going to raise my daughter, my wife and I both made this decision, was this concept of the good enough parent, right? Like, I'm a good parent, I'm good enough, but I'm not trying to be a super parent, you know, and I'm not putting the pressure on myself or the pressure on my child to be super amazing every second of the day. I'm going to be good enough. I'm going to give you both the tools that you need and the dignity of your own struggles.
You talk about you made a commitment to being a human with your kid and always showing that range, that arc of emotion to your child. I think part of being emotionally intelligent and not just in that very rainbows and unicorn way that we talked about is being accepting of others treating us that way too, right? And so when you talk to your coaching clients, like what do you talk to them about how you react to or receive that sort of emotional range from others?
Yeah, I mean, that's a phenomenal question. I really appreciate that. And this is making me think of a conversation that I was having with a client, obviously, you know, name's confidential, but having a conversation where my client had delivered very disappointing feedback to a report of theirs. And, you know, details aren't important, but it was disappointing. It was negative. And the employee didn't react well. The employee was upset. The employee, you know, was like openly questioning, you know, the future and, you know, and all of that. And so my client was coming to me and saying, you know, I'm just not sure I can continue to work with this person and tell me what happened. And my client said, shared a decision that, you know, really had a negative impact on my client or on my employee. And they, you know, expressed X, Y, and Z, and it was really upsetting. And I said, well, what are you thinking of doing? And my client said, well, I'm just not sure that we can work together. And I said, well, why? And they said, because they had such a negative reaction. And my question was, well, how else are they supposed to react? Supposed to be happy, right?
Yeah.
This had to do with like where they're going to live. You know, if they could live in another state and work, well, how are they supposed to react? Like, are they supposed to be happy and excited that you just made a decision that was going to, you know, negatively impact their life, or just at the very least was not what they, you know, desperately wanted or powerfully wanted? So I think it's important to allow your employee to have their reaction, to process that in a relationship with you, and to work through it. And in this case, they worked through it. They actually came up with a different solution that ultimately, in the end, was even better than the first idea. And they were able to, you know, put it together and get to a better spot with it. But that that challenge with tolerating like dissent or a negative or negativity, that was a big issue. And you know, I mean, I don't. I thank goodness that there was a coaching buffer, right, and sounding board to be able to work that out. And I also don't want to make it seem like, you know, that was a irrational decision by my client. I mean, you know, I've had those experiences too, where I get, you know, I get a reaction I don't want, and I'm just, you know, I'm furious, and I just think, how could that person say that? And then I have to stop and like ground myself and say, well, what's that person supposed to be? Like, why am I the only person who gets to have, you know, negative reaction? Like,
and that self-awareness that you're showing by doing that is highly, highly emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
And that's a part of emotional intelligence, an entire spectrum that a lot of people don't think about. And so we're so appreciative that today you were able to come on with us and have this discussion. I think it's one of the most pointed discussions we've had on this show, and most unique and showed a perspective that we have not covered. And so we're so, so appreciative of that, David. David, I have to ask you before we let you go, and we absolutely need to have you back. And we will to go deeper into a bunch of different topics I could think of to go in with you. How can people reach you? How can they get to know David more closely?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Samir. And I've really enjoyed this conversation. This has been, you know, one of my favorites, without a doubt. Yeah. So I am a part of Evolution. We're a coaching consulting organization. We do some other things as well, but that's what we do the most. Based in Southern California, our website is evolution.team. T-E-A-M. So go ahead and have a look at that. You can see who we are and look at a picture of me along with all of my colleagues on our team page. We work with organizations that are, very early stage startups up to mature organizations, educational institutions, and the whole gamut in between. And we love to do the kind of work that's very real and authentic, similar to the conversation that we've had. And we have found that our work is a very big unlock for organizations who are trying to grow at, you know, very high velocity. So I'd love to connect with people who find that appealing. And I'm extraordinarily grateful for the time and our engagement.
Thank you very much. Absolute pleasure.
I think you've brought such a refreshing take on emotional intelligence, and something that's going to resonate a ton with a lot of our listeners. And we are so grateful for having you. Thank you so much, David. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Emotional Intelligence Podcast. We hope you found it informative and enjoyable. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on your favorite platform. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more people. If you're interested in learning more about the topics we discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. You can find them by visiting our website. And if you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at info@emotionalintelligence.com or connect with us on social media by using the links in the show notes.